Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wisdom Wide Open Radio. Join me, your host, Craig Hannis. Join your host, Craig Hannis, and me, Susie Bonham Craig, as we embark on another journey to open the portal of wisdom. We invite you to participate in the chat room and call in with your comments and questions on 718-305-6584 and press 1 to enter the queue. And now, our journey begins. Wisdom journeyers and soulmates, welcome to another episode of Wisdom Wide Open Radio. I'm so thrilled that Craig is joining us this evening. So, Craig, you're on the air. Please say hi to everyone.
Hello, everyone. I'm glad to be back.
This is great. I just want to welcome you all. It's December 13th, 2009, and, you know, families and friends and coworkers are all gathering together and congregating in the spirit of, you know, giving and community, and we thought it would be a really good opportunity to use the show tonight to learn ways to enhance our communication with others. And this is part of our Conscious Business Productivity Series. So I'm really excited to bring you our two guests this evening, Dr. Fred Liefgren and Lee Wagman of Personality Resources. And but before I do that and before I introduce you to them, I'd just like to make a couple of announcements that right now in the midst of living in the fire of change is a conference going on in Salt Lake City, Utah for the Living in the Fire of Change conference starring Barbara Marx Hubbard, a really awesome conference based on social change, evolution, and really looking to see what's emerging in these social orders and how we can be more productive as communities. And I'd also like to throw out a warm hello to a good friend, Angelica, who listens with us. She tries to listen with us. She's actually deaf, and she just had surgery yesterday, so I just want to throw out a really nice hello to her. And then I'd like to introduce you to our guest this evening. And the topic that we're going to be discussing is the keys to effective communication and what does your core personality reveal and reveal those of others who you communicate with. And I want to start by introducing Fred. Dr. Fred Liefgren is he's actually the board of directors of Personality Resources, and his career includes years of teaching, presenting, training, consulting, mentoring, and administration. And he obtained his PhD in counseling psychology from Michigan State University with an undergraduate degree in chemistry, undergraduate degrees in chemistry and biology. And he has a postdoctoral training in transactional analysis, neurolinguistic programming, and Jungian psychology. And he is a pioneer in the health promotion and is co-author of the Lifestyle Assessment Questionnaire. And he's also co-founder of the National Wellness Institute. Now, I want to introduce you to Lee, because Lee is a very integral part of what we're going to be speaking about this evening, and she is actually president of Personality Resources International, and she has an extensive background designing and delivering adult education and training in Canada, the USA, China, and Mexico. And together, Dr. Liefgren and Lee have developed identity mapping and the four-way system. And the four-way system is a customized, holistic, interactive, participant-centered tool that identifies core personalities, enabling the enhancement of effective communication. And thereby, that helps people perform at optimum levels and increase productivity. So identity mapping has been a core fundamental tool behind the success and profitability of many Fortune 500 companies across many industries, as well as universities, and providing efficiency for newly emerging collaborative teams on the edge of change. So I'd like to welcome both Dr. Fred Liefgren and Lee Wagman as soon as I can get my switchboard to come up. Bear me with me 1 second here.
This is our first test, folks.
Yes.
Silence and folding.
Fred and Lee, are you with us?
I am with you.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Sorry about that little technical glitch going
no
on.
No problem.
Welcome. Welcome. I'm really, really excited about having the two of you on this evening to really spread out to the world. Let the world know what you two have been up to and really the success that you've been having with these wonderful tools that you've created.
We appreciate the opportunity and thank you for having us. Fred, are you with us?
Yes, and we're looking forward to sharing this information with your audience. We think we have something that's very important, valuable, that they can benefit from.
Well, that I know, and I know, and you know, for our listeners, just to let you know that Craig and I actually experienced a hands-on workshop with both Fred and Lee, and it was really, really awesome experience to be in the community of this workshop. And very revealing. It was a self-discovery process that I was really, really intrigued with. And having been in the sales training and coaching industries and having put together and utilized a lot of different assessments that are out there, this one really truly stood out for me because of the human aspects of it. And I'd like to first ask Fred if he could just, shed a little light on how that process works and why is it that you chose such a process or a workshop of discovery such as the one that you did?
Well, Susie, how the process works is we have developed an assessment tool called identity mapping. And this assessment tool measures your core personality, and this measurement is based on the theory of Carl Jung. So it's very substantive. And it's a 15 or 20-minute process in terms of time where you identify behaviors that you engage in, and by putting these behaviors on permanent card, you discover the profile of your core personality. The importance of that is the more we know about who we are, the more capable we are of functioning effectively, and the more it unleashes our human potential. So the key thing is understand who you are, and that's where we begin with this whole process.
Okay, Fred, thank you. Thank you for that. But identity mapping, even from my experience, didn't really look like a test. So would you be able to explain a little bit about what's different possibly from a lot of the assessment tools that are out there that, you know, we get online with and we just, you know, sit in front of a computer with multiple choice questions.
Right.
We shudder when we hear the word test. We don't use the word test. Identity mapping is a self-discovery instrument, and there are no forced choices. It provides positive reinforcement of who each person is. Once you discover who you are, you are able to bond with other people who are very much like you, and you're also able to understand other people who are very different from you. You know, those people that we walk around and we say, what are they looking at? I don't see the world the way they see it. This instrument is designed, it's really, if you want to really narrow it down, this helps everybody play nicely together in the sandbox. The sandbox
I like the way you said that. I like the way you said that. And having experienced this, not a test or assessment, but having experienced this instrument, personality identification or self-discovery instrument, firsthand, I must say, having been in that industry for quite a number of years, it is the most non-threatening experience I've ever had. And by non-threatening, I mean it was enjoyable. It was a lot of fun to go through the process that lasted 15 or 20 minutes, as Fred said. And then, after you have completed your own self-discovery, personality profile, so to speak, you are able to get in groups with other folks, which you folks will talk about more, and have a lot of fun going through many, many processes that show not only your own type of characterization, type personality type, but to understand the personality types of others. It's a very, very enjoyable uplifting experience.
Good.
Well,
glad
in the process, you have 100 items that you have to review, and all the items that describe you are on little cards that aren't strips you can peel off. If the item describes you, you put it on a permanent card. If it doesn't describe you, just leave it where it is. And when you get done with reviewing the 100 items, you'll have a personality profile. A very good description. All items on there are positive. There are no negative items. And there's more ownership when you are looking at these items, you peel them off and put them on a permanent card, than there is when you're doing some kind of an assessment, whether you have to check A or B. So it's just much more powerful in that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Fred, and I agree with that. And I think the difference for me was the experience of it all, because I felt that instead of looking into a computer and having multiple choice questions, I think what typically happens to us is that we feel that we're being measured and monitored, and that, you know, Big Brother is watching, and that we tend to move away from our intuitiveness, and we actually start thinking about the questions instead of being intuitively called to answer the question. And what I mean by that is that we tend to start thinking about what the right answer should be.
Yeah.
And this is really what I loved about the experiential workshop that you offered, because it wasn't a threatening atmosphere. Everyone was there going through the same thing that I was going through in this self-discovery process. So thereby, it already started as a community. And there wasn't any threat there, because everyone was doing the same thing. We weren't hiding in our computers in a room and going, oh, gee, I wonder if I'm going to get this right.
Well, many of personality tests and assessments and so forth, you're never quite sure what they're asking you with the question, because the questions often are disguised, so you don't know what they're trying to measure, so you don't know quite how to answer it. All the behaviors we list are very clear. There's no confusion. You either say, yes, this is a way I behave, or no, this is not a way I behave.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, you know, a much clearer way of responding. And almost all other instruments that are used have to be scored externally by someone else who comes back and reports to you the results. On identity mapping, you score your own instrument. You merely peel off those things that describe you, count them up, and that's how you get your score. You report back to the facilitator who you are. The facilitator does not tell you who you are, which is a vast difference.
Yeah, that kind of eliminates room for judgment, doesn't it?
Yes.
It does, and it also increases accuracy, because we believe that this instrument is very accurate because people are answering honestly and they're not worrying about what other people are trying to find out about them. Mm-hmm. Or what are the right or wrong answers. You can be absolutely honest because the only person who's going to see your answers is you.
And all personality assessment measures, tests, and so forth are self-report. There's no machine you can hook up to and it measures your personality. You must gather the information from the individual themselves.
One of the semi-threatening things I've experienced myself, as well as have observed others in experiencing through the years, is what I will label the seeming trickiness of these kinds of assessments. Not yours at all, but the trickiness. By that I mean you'll be asked a question two or three times in two or three different ways. A question might be number 3, and then again it appears as number 27, and again it's number 44, and it's like I'm being tested to find out if I'm being true to me. And it's kind of a threatening thing. It's like, gee whiz, I'm being as straightforward and honest as I can be. Why is this test structured this way? But yours isn't, because I'm determining who I am based on the criteria, based on the 100 descriptors of me, and I can pick and choose whatever I want freely, without feeling tested or threatened.
Well, when you're feeling threatened and you're not quite sure, it's very confusing and it's more difficult to respond. And so on our instrument, we have no hidden agenda.
Right.
So whatever item is on there, for example, there's an item called competitive. You either are competitive or you aren't. Like variety. You either like variety or you don't. Need freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Either true for you or it is not. As I say, they're all positive. It's just that we cannot be all of the 100 items, so we pick off those that really reflect who we are.
You know, Fred, bringing up those elements that you just mentioned, perhaps you or either Lee or both of you could speak to or and speak about the four-way system and what that is.
Well, the identity mapping is merely an instrument to determine your core personality. And so when you have finished, you have a measure of your core personality, a description of your core personality. Because it categorizes every individual into four different dimensions, from a dominant down to the one that's least well-developed, you have kind of a profile or a spectrum. And what we have is that we talk about four ways of behaving: action, organized, logical, and relationship. So how we proceed to work in life, in our careers, in our relationships, in our homes, or wherever, there are four different basic ways we tend to orient ourselves to the world. And the four that I mentioned, action, organized, logical, and relationship, are four ways. So you can approach any situation, any relationship, any interaction from any one of four different ways. And that's where the training begins, to help understand what are the ways on which I can now perform and do perform.
Okay, Lee, would you like to add to that?
Well, I think that the other thing that we also measure and explain and let people work through, which is often one of the main or one of the greatest areas of confusion, I think, in personality testing, is the aspect of introversion and extroversion. We also, I think a lot of people confuse an extrovert with a person who is social or outgoing. And I think that when we get into actually practicing and applying what people have learned in the initial part of the workshop in the identity mapping tool, a lot of the exercises that we will do in a workshop are merely applications that will help people take it. We are very pleased with the fact that this is a very quick process, and when people leave the workshop, they can immediately put the four-way system, which is understanding how everyone in the world has all four aspects of this personality. But as we are interacting with other people, we can identify pretty quickly after the workshop how what the primary, the strongest personality characteristics are, and we can communicate and relate with those people in a more effective way. In other words, we can speak to them in a language that they will understand. Whereas previously, a lot of us, we have our own preferred way of seeing the world, and we tend to communicate in that because that's the way that's the easiest for us. We tend to communicate in the style that's most comfortable for us. But when we want to be effective in communicating with other people, which becomes extremely important at this time of year as we're entering the holiday season or we're deep into the holiday season and interacting with friends and family, it's very interesting to see how much more positive the results are and how much more effective the communication is when we are able to identify another person's core personality and communicate with them in their preferred way. Suddenly, eureka, we have successful communication.
It's kind of
wow.
I think one thing that might be fundamentally helpful is we've had a nice broad-based description of what it is that this tool does for people and how people come together and go through the self-discovery process individually and then come together in groups. I think it might be helpful if we could spend a few minutes, if both Lee and Fred could give summaries of each of the four ways. In other words, a brief description of what action means, what organized means, what logical means, and what relationship means. It's kind of a precedent for going forth. It's kind of a standard upon which we will base our discussion, or at least part of our discussion. Is that possible to do, or is it shortchanging the whole process?
Yes, and I make two quick comments on that. One is I think that Fred is probably the best equipped to do that. And the second thing is I started in on introversion and extroversion and then skipped through it onto some other points. So I would also open it up to Fred to, Fred, if you don't mind revisiting the aspect of introversion and extroversion.
Well,
as well as the four ways.
Okay, I'll be glad to. The difference between extroversion and introversion really has to do with where we get our psychic energy. And extroverts increase their psychic energy by interacting. The more they talk, the more they're involved, the more they're interacting and relating, the higher energy they find within their mental processes. And so this is exciting and stimulating for them. The introvert, on the other hand, loses energy through all this interaction, and the more they interact, their energy level goes down. To get their energy back up, they need to have spend a little time alone, be quiet, meditate, take a walk, do something by themselves. So one is not better than the other. They are just different ways of how we are wired to relate and communicate with the world. And as Lee pointed out, you can have an introvert who is very, very sociable. A difference between the introversion and extroversion sociableness is the extrovert tends to tell you a lot about who they are. The introverted process is one where the individual prefers more privacy around their personal life. And I always say, if you don't know what an extrovert is thinking, you are not listening. If you don't know what an introvert is thinking, you haven't asked, because if you don't ask, they probably are not going to tell you. So that kind of That kind of dramatizes those. And there's an assumption out there that everybody's like me, and if they're not like me, they must be messed up or confused, which is, of course, totally erroneous. There are four very powerfully distinct ways that people are oriented to the world, and you saw that in the workshop that you participated in, because after you identified your core personality, you got together with a group of people who had your same dominant way to expand and on that, so you better understood what that is by identifying your talents or strengths, your values, your needs, and where you get happiness and joy and so forth. And then when you share that information, it was so dramatically different for all the four groups. And the action group are individuals who are interested in active kinds of behaviors. They're spontaneous. They're excited. They want variety. They want to move into new areas and new situations. They're competitive. They want to engage in the world in ways where they have a lot of freedom, where they have fun, where they enjoy what they are doing. These are individuals who would rather beg forgiveness than ask permission. They always want to make deals. For them, rules, procedures are only suggestions. They tend to want to assume leadership, take charge. They're animated. They talk loudly. They're engaged. A lot of movement. They live for the moment. No for them is not acceptable. To them, that's only a challenge. They want to have the freedom to move and do what they want. They tend to be very non-judgmental. They're very tolerant of others. And they bring a lot of fun and excitement to the world.
So beautifully described.
Does that kind of give you a description
yes.
of that group? The people who are so much not like them, but are certainly equally valuable individuals and play important roles in our total world, are the organized group. They are the people who want structure. They want a program. They want a plan. They want rules. They write the rules. They set things up so that people are successful. They want efficiency. They make lists. They plan out everything they do. They will always be there for you. They are reliable. They are dependable. They're loyal to the organization. They tend to follow traditions. They're not opposed to change for change's sake, but they don't want to have to engage in it if it is not efficient and effective. There are people who look at things in a continuum of right and wrong, and they want to be right. They want to support others, help others accomplish tasks. They can be very parental, caring, nurturing, and they want to do things that make sense, that provide security and stability in our community, in our groups, in our families, in our world. Does that kind of give you
yep.
an overview?
Nice.
Organized and action can sometimes complement one another beautifully because they each have different agendas, but both agendas are essential in any community, any group, for getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
The third group is relationship. And the relationship people are those who are very nurturing, they're very supportive, they're very caring. They're the people you tend to seek out if you've got a problem or you want some sympathy or you want help. These people are very, very accommodating. They do whatever they can to help you. It's very hard for them to say no. They want to help everybody, make sure things go well, make sure that people are happy, that people are accomplishing what they need to accomplish. They need to connect with others. They're very sensitive. They read others very, very well and understand others. They have a lot of empathy. They're the people who go out and volunteer. They want to make sure everybody's getting what needs to be done, done. They can often rally around social causes. They're the people who lead with their heart. They want to make sure that what is being done is done in a way that others will appreciate and value. They're concerned about happiness of others. They're the most tolerant of all the groups. They're the most expressive with feelings, and they read others very, very well. They understand other people. And they also want to avoid conflicts. If at all possible, they do not want to engage in conflict. Does that kind of cover
great
that
summary.
One?
Yes, and Fred, I'll step right in there and say that would be me.
It is, Susan. Very definitely.
You know, and it's great when you get some validation like that. Now, did we cover all of them?
No, logical. We need to do
logical. Logical, yes, which our dear friendly is.
That's right. And
indeed.
Maybe you want to describe the logically.
Oh, Fred, I think you would probably do it much better than I would. I might give you a very pejorative answer on this one. I think that everyone should look at the world as I do. I think everyone should look at the world and see it as a very logical. Self-discovery is not nearly as important as discovering wonderful new things in the universe and problem solving, and innovation is so important, and doing something, coming up with a great new idea and starting something for the first time, not being as concerned about finishing it off, but wanting it to be done perfectly, because I think we tend to be perfectionists. I value quality a great deal. I like anything that's challenging, scientific, high tech. I love debate and discussion, particularly when I can prove that I'm right. I like being an architect of change. I think people of this way love to set high standards, and we go after new discoveries, and anything that has not been discovered before is a challenge to us. Love academic intellectual challenges. Fill in the blanks, Fred.
you're a visionary, and it's the logical people that got us to the moon. But I always say it wasn't the logic people went. They sent the action people because they weren't sure it was going to work.
That's so true.
The action people will take on any challenge. Let's try it. You know, if it doesn't work, we'll figure out something else. And the logical are wonderful building these models and systems and really moving, you know, the world into the future.
Because we enjoy solving problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can never have enough information. Analyze.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, go ahead, Fred.
Well, I was just going to say, the logical people are out really to discover these new vistas or whatever they are. In other words, discovery is so important to them. And so historically, they would have been our explorers and our inventors. Those have been logical people who have brought us to the level that we're at today.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, Fred, because especially in the circles here of our listeners that come and play with us here on Wisdom Wide Open Radio, it brings to mind a lot of what's going on now in a lot of these emerging social, economical, you know, we're looking at some structures breaking down and falling that aren't serving us anymore, and we're looking to where this is bringing us. And it brings me back, I was talking with Craig earlier, about some of these visionaries and thought leaders now that are really focusing on bringing back the element of community. And that's another thing that I find really interesting about this workshop and this tool is that it starts in the basis of community. We're not singletons sitting at home on computers, although the technology is very, very valuable because without it, we wouldn't have been able to connect around the globe like we have and beyond. And, you know, I just love the synergy of all of this because to me, as I mentioned to Craig, it's like everything has a a symbiotic relationship with nature. And this is actually recognizing our symbiotic relationship with our own true nature in community and how we can come together and really accelerate the process so that we're not running around trying to, you know, deal with misgiving and misinformation and not being able to understand. I mean, often in my life, you know, I was always into self-discovery, but I was one of those people around 30 years old that I was rudely awakened by, yes, the rest of the world doesn't look like me, you know, think like me. And
yeah.
I was astonished with that, and that really evoked my study and investigation into the human psyche. So, and this thrills me, just the very fact that you've brought a tool together like that, that is on the edge. This is on the edge of evolution when it comes back to the humanness of interaction and then the understanding. And it's really like creating a new language that all of us can, you know, because a lot of the focus is now going on to energy. Everything is energy. And then you have people who have been communicating via languages and words and speaking. And now we're taking it to a whole new level. And this is a really awesome blend of being able to do that and bring it down to a practical cognitive level where your feelings are engaged and your thought processes are engaged. And there's a semblance. There is that symbiotic relationship between all of these core values. And isn't it true that we all, it's not that I'm the relationship person or Craig's the action person or Lee's the logical person, it's just that we all have these different core elements of our personality in varying degrees.
We have preferences. We have one way that's easier for us to operate than others. It's the way that we naturally fall into communicating with other people. It's the way that we naturally function in our everyday life. But we all have the capacity developed to one degree or another to act and communicate in each of the other ways. It's just those ways aren't necessarily as comfortable for us. They don't come as naturally.
For example, they have different strengths. And so the strengths of the logical person are seeing the big picture, being the architect of change, setting high standards, focusing on the mission of the organization, building conceptual frameworks and systems, seeing the core complex issues and problems and resolving them, et cetera. Whereas the strengths of the action person are to take risks, go out there and move on it. After something has been produced or developed, they're the ones who are going to probably implement it and get it out into the market. So in any community, any organization, we need all four of these ways, everybody contributing their own strengths, because we have the most strengths in our dominant way, the fewest in our last way.
Right, and we're not actually weeding out anyone. We're looking to all of these core elements as how people can contribute where they feel most effective, most engaged, most joyful in being part of that community and making a contribution.
Yeah, no, we don't weed out anybody because we need everybody. Anyone in a community or group or whatever, there's going to be a significant deficit there. And these differences that there are between personalities, once we understand these personalities are very, very different, we also need to realize it is not the differences that are the problem, it's the lack of respect for the differences.
Yes.
In the community, it's about respecting and valuing people who are different from me, not thinking somehow they're a threat to me or I need to ignore them or avoid them or they couldn't possibly have as good an answer as I do.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, just talking about how each one of these components are inter-accommodating. Craig was laughing at me because I don't think that's really a word. But inherently, concurrently, we are all cooperative. These are all the cooperative components that make up who we are. I mean, our own selves do that without our permission. You know, all that harmonizing takes place without us having to direct that. So I think that's an amazing assimilation of that process on from the inside out.
And what the four-way system does, it helps us, everyone, understand these four very distinct behavior patterns, and then being able to identify people who represent these and how to engage with them to get the most benefit out of our interaction, our group, our community, to
mm-hmm.
accomplish the goals we need to accomplish.
Yeah, and don't you feel like it's a more, it just, the way it starts off is very cooperative. I mean, it's almost like that's the intention of the entire workshop, is not just to discover this, but to actually be maybe unconsciously or consciously participating while it's
yes.
going on.
And to be able to use this information so that we can engage others. And so if in any community or group there are some tasks to be performed that to give structure, we need some organized people to accomplish that.
Mm-hmm.
If we need to see where do we want to go and what's our big vision, the logical people can help us accomplish that. All of us can contribute, but they can probably make a powerful contribution. And the relationship group help the group mold and work together and everybody respect and value and be cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now you've come up with this awesome design, you know, and it's actually, to me, it doesn't look like it's directly related to addressing problems, but it's coming up with a design that has order, and it creates good communication through good design. So for me, it seems like it makes it possible for the good of humanity and the good of the good to be interrelated and augmenting each other's processes and thoughts and each, I guess, vital tool that they contribute to really bring about what they're looking to change. And this happens not only in organizations, but I see the need for this. There can be a lot of people that get together because they have great, great energy, and now they have a vision. And they got to work their way backwards now, and they have to figure out, okay, I can do this and I can do this. And I think where your tool really helps is it helps others to realize what's still needed in the group so that we can be more productive if it's not here, or what do we have an abundance of, and so what further do we need? Is that pretty much what you do when you go into organizations?
Yeah, well, pretty definitely. What we have provided is a simple model to understand human dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the model does. But the model, furthermore, gives people then strategies and skills and techniques they can use to engage with one another to capitalize on the most powerful aspects of every one of the dominant ways of personality. And so it enables people to function at a higher level, more effectively, and drawing on the expertise that each of these four ways can bring to the table to accomplish whatever it is needs to be accomplished.
Mm. Well, thank you for all of that. I'm looking forward to more, but I do want to just take a moment and mention to our listeners that may not be on the show page, for those of you that are, if you click on Lee's lovely face on the show page, it will take you to www.personalityresources.com, and you'll be able to find out a lot more about exactly what the process and the workshop is about. And I believe you have an upcoming workshop. Is that in January or February, Lee?
Actually, we have a workshop coming up on January 12th, which will be held in New Jersey, and we have one about a week later in Toronto, and I'm not exactly sure of the date on that one. I'll try to get you that before we're finished here.
Okay. Well, if not, you're always welcome to go visit your website.
And that information will be posted on the website tomorrow. It's not
great.
On at the moment, but tomorrow morning we will have information about our executive previews, and those will be held in a couple of locations. Plus, we have workshops around the country. We have one coming up in Chicago. We will have it, all that information will be posted at personalityresources.com.
Great, great, and for all of you that are out there, wherever you're listening from, know that Personality Resources has made its way globally. So these workshops are actually offered throughout the world, and it's just a matter of getting there, right? I mean, you travel everywhere.
We Absolutely. Also have our material in six different languages currently, and we'll add to it as we go into those other countries. So
something that was interesting for me in your wonderful workshop, and I think because it was interesting to me, I would assume it would be interesting to quite a few folks, our listeners, is the distinct people in the world that most of us are familiar with, that you summarized. You went through a very interesting list of people who fit into each of the categories: action, organized, logical, and relationship. And that's one thing I think might be helpful for people and interesting to them. And then the other thing that I think people might want to hear about, as I did and I read about on your website, is one or two testimonials or examples of how this process has been so effective for an organization. You can choose whether or not to mention the organization's name or not. But those two things are high on my list of elements that I think would be of significant interest to our listeners.
One of the examples that I can cite is that in a workshop like you attended a couple of weeks ago, this was done within an organization, and the manager of that unit had planned to dismiss one of the employees of that unit who was also attending the workshop. And so there was going to be a dismissal letter sent out in a couple of days. After going through the workshop, the manager all of a sudden realized that she had misjudged this individual, saw the individual, although having a very different personality from her, really brought something very, very important and very special to the organization, and the whole plan to dismiss this person was eliminated. And now that person is seen as a valuable contributor to that group and to that organization. And so
what a wonderful testimony. Wow.
Here an individual's, you know, job was saved after there was a better understanding and communication could open up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so that's just one kind of a situation. We also have a company that was hiring people with job descriptions that weren't very accurate, and so they had enormous turnover in the organization. And after we helped them rewrite the job announcements to hire people, the right people were then applying for the job, and retention went up significantly in the company.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so crucial that you get the right person in the right position, because when we are working in a job that is congruent with our internal motivators, which are our needs and our values, nobody needs to prod us along whatsoever. We just go. You can't stop us because that's what we want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
It's when we get into a position that does not fit us that it's much more difficult
mm-hmm.
and challenging. Lee, do you want to share some stories?
Well, I think one thing that we've skipped over that I think, Fred, you and I both tend to take for granted but surprises a lot of people when they hear about hear about identity mapping in the introductory part of the four-way system, and they hear the end result, which is that we go into organizations. And I say organizations because we work with religious groups, we work with families, we work with nonprofits, we work with a lot of educational institutions. So this isn't just confined to a corporate setting. We work with a lot of individuals, particularly with coaches and just any place where there are more than two people, there's a need for PRI. We skip over the central part of what we do, and I think it's important to emphasize that we have because it sounds like we're doing all these things that are for very different companies, and we're doing very different things, and people might start to question, well, are we trying to pretend that we're all things to all people? And what we are and what we do best and what we focus on is we're a communications company, but we have over 200 possible training outcomes. And when we go into an organization that is feeling stress of one kind or another, feeling pain in some area of their operations, or we go into a family which has stress, or we go into a religious organization, we are able to give them some guidelines for over 200 different ways that we can approach the challenges that they face. And we are then able to custom design workshops to enhance the communication within the organization. So it might be a problem of basic communication, or maybe we have a problem with leadership where the leaders are trying to lead but the followers aren't following. We're able to work through that in a way that we enable the leaders to lead because the followers want to follow, because they feel valued and important, because the leader is speaking to them in a language that they can understand. We do sales, we do management training, we do diversity workshops. The example that I think is probably one of the most interesting is after 9/11, we worked with an organization in New York City where the employees had not only been traumatized by the events of 9/11 because they witnessed all the horrible things that went on at the World Trade Center, but they also had to, their offices were condemned. They had to move to a different part of New York. It meant a longer commute for a lot of people. There was a lot of stress, and obviously when people are under stress, there's a lot more conflict. We went in and we were able to work with them, work them through some of the organizational change, enhance the communication skills so that people understood and respected how different people respond to change. How for some people, change is a wonderful thing. It's invigorating. And for other people, it's depleting, and they have a great deal of trouble adapting to change. So people gained a great deal. They're a wonderful workshop of a great company, which had wonderful employees who were just dealing with an awful lot of change, which wasn't easy for all of them to accept and to continue to not only go about their business, but just even in their personal lives dealing with the stress. That was one of the examples where I felt corporate wellness was such an issue, where we were able to go in and decrease stress, enhance their communication, but communication with not only their superiors and their coworkers and their subordinates, but with the people in their personal lives, with their families. And when we can decrease stress and enhance communication and eliminate confusion, and you've got a little more harmony in the organization, everybody rowing in the same direction, obviously the people are more productive. And when people are more productive, a corporation is more profitable. So that's why we are frequently called in to an organization where there are communication issues and there's stress between people within the organization. Because what the organizations are looking for is results that drop right down to the bottom line. But we have a lot of companies that care deeply about their employees and their clients, and they bring us in just to make sure that everybody feels valued and important in the organization, that their leaders and managers are communicating in a way that they can feel part of the organization.
Well, you're certainly an answer to the prayers of where leadership is evolving to. I feel that, you know, that corporations are changing. They're taking a look at exactly where their value sits and what really, you know, gets to their bottom dollar and profitability, and in a co-creative and harmonizing, type of atmosphere and cooperative community. So I really love what you guys have done, and I'm loving what you were doing, and I loved my own experience in this. You mentioned, Lee, about, you gave an example about how this has worked to bring about change in organization. Do you have any other examples where it might have worked in some of the other areas that you focus on with either nonprofits or universities or families?
Well, I think it's interesting because the example that Fred just gave was actually a university example, and I think it shows that we We're basically about communication. We're about people talking, speaking, enhancing their communication, speaking effectively to each other, even though this happens to be my first day with my new tongue, so I can't seem to talk. But it's very interesting to watch how it doesn't matter, and I think Fred referred to this earlier, it doesn't matter what sort of organization we're dealing with. We have the same kind of results when people communicate in a way that other people can hear them. We have great results. Now, we have customer service and sales examples across the board, and it's funny because sometimes we're talking about a nonprofit which is trying to, it's a fundraising effort, and they're having difficulty with volunteers. Sometimes it's fundraising efforts where they're looking for soliciting corporate donations and going about it, very well-meaning people, going about it in the ways they're most comfortable, but it may not be the ways in which the leaders of the titans of industry are really interested in hearing what they have to say. So we can go in and work with them in that instance. We don't pretend that, for example, we teach salespeople how to sell. What we do is we go in and we enhance their communication skills. We help them communicate with the people they're dealing with in a way that people can hear them. So if you happen to be a logical person and you're trying to sell to a relationship person, you can't do it in the way that you're necessarily most comfortable. We go in and we work with them to help them understand that they have to identify the core personality of the person to whom they're trying to sell something and go in and speak in a language that that person understands.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this in the workshop, Lee, or I believe it was Fred, I'm not quite sure. I can't recall exactly, but about that once you take, you go through this process in the workshop, that your intuitiveness really, really rises, that you will be in the company of certain people, and without judgment, you'll be able to key into what type of personality, their core personality, that they are. You'd be able to look for the signals and the signs just from going from through that experience. So it's not that you have to walk in and then have someone else go through the workshop so that you can be able to communicate with them.
No.
Correct.
People give clues quite easily about who they are. And, Craig, you asked about some famous people that, you know, maybe would help your listeners understand the personality. For example, in the action group, Amelia Earhart would be kind of a poster child for the action web. But so is Lucille Ball, Winston Churchill, Mae West, Brett Favre, President John Kennedy, Teddy Roosevelt, Tom Cruise. These are people whose lives function around the action mode much of the time.
Mm-hmm.
In the organized, George Washington was certainly a cornerstone of our nation, and also he's representative of that group. A more contemporary person would be Colin Powell, who sets a wonderful example of the organized person. Mother Teresa, Florence Nightingale, people who were very caring, nurturing in that way. In the relation group, we have very powerfully persuasive people in that group. And that's one of the attributes of the relationship. We have Gandhi, we had Napoleon, we had Julius Caesar, Martin Luther King Jr., John Kennedy Jr., Oprah Winfrey, Maya Angelou, Bill Clinton. Those are all representatives of that group. And so once you begin to understand, kind of pick up these patterns, you'll observe these behaviors in other people that you engage with in sales or whatever. And then in the logical, you have Abraham Lincoln, you have Bill Gates, you have Christopher Columbus, you have Meryl Streep, Hillary Clinton, Billy Crystal, Jim Carrey. And Jim Carrey in an interview says, "I think everything to death." Your first impression in the movies is Jim Carrey is much more action than many of his movies. But in his personal life, he's really a very logical person.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of helps, you know,
yes,
put people into these categories as you begin to figure out who are these people and who do I know that acts and behaves like them.
Well, you know, and that's that familiarity that comes to you, because as you sit in the group, you know, where we all do the self-discovery process in the workshop, and then we're placed into these groups, that like attracting like, and what emerges from that, and the ease of which those groups can communicate, and then look at the other four that are grouped in the room, we come to that understanding of, it really gets us to think about, oh, wow, I can communicate that way.
Yeah.
And I can just give a personal example that happened to me while I was working with a company that was very heavy into assessments, both personality and for sales quotients specifically like that. And within our own organization, we took some of these personality tests. And so now that the manager was able to see how we all needed to be communicated with, the one thing that failed in the group was that he didn't reveal how he wanted to be communicated with. So I saw, you know, here it was, right, the shoemaker with no shoes. I'm going to give these people all these assessments so that I know how to communicate with them. But it was very often frustrated because he didn't feel that people were communicating with him. And I actually left that company, and it was just the way it was. So I can attest to the value that this experience does for people. It just opens doors.
And managers begin to realize they don't have one group of subordinates. They really have four groups of subordinates. And many times managers are focused on, I've got to treat everybody the same. Well, for salary and some, you know, procedures and so forth, that's necessary. But people don't want to all be treated on a daily basis the same as every one of their colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And so once a manager realizes that, he can relate to people in a way that they're going to be more responsive to the manager, and they will be much more productive.
I see this in so many walks of life, and you've already addressed so many of them, from corporations through educational institutions and 9/11 survivors and witnesses. One of the most practical elements for me, one of the most valuable for me, even though I haven't done this in a long time, would be for coaches. And I don't mean the kind of coach that Susie is, a life coach. I'm talking about athletic coaches. I was an athletic coach for a number of years, and boy, oh boy, had I been more astute and more understanding and more individualistically focused, I think I could have been more successful in motivating some of my individuals within the context of the team.
For your players, for example, if they're action players, they always respond to a challenge. So when you're giving kind of a rah-rah pitch, you get them going. The organized player needs to know specifically, coach, how do you want me to perform? Give me the steps I need to follow, and I will go do it.
Yes.
The logical one wants to help figure out what are we really trying to accomplish here and how are we going to proceed with this, and they'll come up with wonderful ideas of how we might actually maneuver to win this game or match or whatever. And the relationship people need to know desperately that you really respect and care for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's wonderful for the players. Absolutely wonderful, but the other side of the coin is just as valuable, and that is how the coach responds to and reacts to their comments and their behaviors toward him or her, female or male coach. Yes.
We have some coaches who use our model, and they find
I see why.
Two things. It builds team community where the players are really understanding and respecting each other, and they don't put each other down because they don't all function the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing does, it helps them become – they get a better winning record because they're really playing together as a team with a mutual respect and there's higher morale and an understanding of who maybe is going to make this play most successful. And so it cuts down sometimes on getting the wrong person trying to pull the thing off. The right person needs to pull it off.
And I think it also goes back to creating a unified team of diverse personalities, which is something that you do on both in athletics and in a corporate setting and in any, even in a family. People are very, very different. And to get people who are very different to have respect is the key thing to get them to working together well.
Well, within the context of communication, what better scenario can you have than one in which people are both open and receptive to one another. And this is such a beautiful way. I'm oversimplifying, I know, but this is such a beautiful way to help people get that way, become that way, more open and more receptive as they communicate.
I like what
as
you
they
said.
Work
I like what you said. That's very, very right on target.
And simple is what we really were striving for with this model. We weren't looking for something that was complex or mysterious or that people would have difficulty in understanding. There's lots and lots of that out there. So if people are looking for things that are difficult to understand or you can't figure them out, that's fine. But we were really striving to have something that was very simple, very easy to understand. We were striving for accuracy. But at the same time, we didn't want something that would be threatening. And the whole program is designed around people being able to really understand who they are and who are the others who are different from them and how can they make it work. It's so when you go back to, I'm glad to hear you simplify it because that's really what we're striving for.
And no matter what...
I'm experiencing it more as we speak, and it's enjoyable. It was enjoyable when I was with you folks going through the workshop, and this is just an expansion and a continuation of that same level of enjoyment. It's eye-opening, and it's fun.
Let me turn the tables just for a minute and ask you a question, Susie and Craig. Don't you feel that the challenges that people are facing the internet is wonderful, and BlackBerries are wonderful, and all these wonderful communication tools are terrific. But when it comes to working together well with people and communicating effectively, do you not think that that's providing an additional challenge because people aren't face-to-face and they're not in situations where, in a lot of cases, in situations, be it a corporate situation, a religious institution, people who used to meet face-to-face are now sending a quick text message to do the same thing. Does that not make this challenge of communicating effectively and people feeling valued and important, does that not make it even more difficult?
You've said it. It's almost rhetorical. Yes, it does make it more difficult. And I'll give you one quick example, and then, Susie, I'm sorry to jump in. One example, real-life example for me, is that I was a teacher for 13 years at the college and high school and college levels in succession. Loved it, absolutely loved teaching. And I moved from there into corporate America, a number of different companies. And for about the last 14 or 15 years, I've been involved in e-learning. And one of the things I discovered, I had some challenges with e-learning over colleges that offer courses over the internet, and some of them don't even require the students ever to show up. There's never any human contact. It's all over the internet and on the phone or on speaker systems. Blended learning emerged, and I believe that blended learning has a stronger suit today, especially for for-profit institutions like Phoenix and other institutions like that. But I believe that there has to be that element of human interaction. And this tool is kind of an underplay of what you are offering, but this tool certainly goes a long way in enhancing that process for live individuals coming together. They don't have to always come together, but boy, not having that, people are missing something, that human interaction.
Well, we really learn by, bouncing ideas, suggestions, interactions off of others. It stimulates the whole learning process.
Well, it does, and the body language is huge, too. That's just another element that is missing, as Lee mentioned.
Right.
Off the top, isn't something missing when people are just relying upon so-called social networking without ever knowing the people live, seeing the people live?
This goes back to what I had said earlier about, I'm grateful. I really appreciate where technology has taken us to be able to connect. But now what do we do once we connect? How do we continue? How do we maintain those relationships? And how do we really know what's going on? I mean, just in having gone through the exercise in the workshop, now I'm more in tune to people that I'm connecting with online because I see where they're coming from. Now, it's not a substitute for that, but it certainly enhanced my awareness to people that I'm communicating with. And I'm just not only thinking like, well, why can't they respond in a different way? I'm not asking those questions anymore. So even from someone who has just experienced the workshop, it has thoroughly enhanced my life as far as being able to not make judgments, but to open up to some more possibilities. It's opening up my mind and my heart to be able to take a look at this person that I'm communicating with. So like I said, it goes back to earlier. And I think that's where we're all going. I think a lot of these, the emergence that's happening in these social orders with social media is we're really beginning to see the difference between communicating through technology and communicating face-to-face. And I really believe that in all the technology, in the absence of the face-to-face, it's becoming more and more meaningful to us to be able to come together in groups and brainstorm in these active co-creative relationships in actual face-to-face community.
Mm-hmm. What you're seeing, Susie, is the person being who they are. What they're doing just because that's who they are. They're not doing it to annoy you. They're not doing it to avoid you or what have you. And so you have a greater respect and valuing of that person, because there's a tendency often to get into conflict because somehow people aren't responding to us. And the sources of conflict are always differing needs. We don't typically fight over different strengths or different ways of finding happiness, but everybody wants their needs met. And those are the sources of conflict, and that's where we have to get resolution and really understand and respect each other and know where each other is coming from.
Well, it definitely touches the respect factor there, and that's what I meant by opening my mind and my heart, is that I'm not making those judgments as quickly as I might have in the past, because I'm still trying to connect with wanting to be understood and not misunderstood. And now I have an opportunity to see how that person is receiving me, and I don't know, it is like Craig said, it's a blending of communication, and I think it works out really well.
The blending of methods of communication, yes.
Methods, yes. And the aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you take it to another level in terms of diversity in the larger arena, we maintain that the real significant diversity is really core personality. And these other things are merely overlays. They're not irrelevant or unimportant, but they're merely overlays. And in any organization, no matter how diverse the people are in terms of cultural, gender, backgrounds, racial backgrounds, and so forth, what you find is that you'll have a group of people, for example, an action group of people, and there'll be representatives in there from all genders, all cultures, all races in that same group, and they all have an enormous amount of thing in common, which sort of erases and minimizes the issues that often get involved in interactions in any community or workplace around race and culture and gender and so forth.
Well, it kind of eliminates those factors in communication. Yeah. And, you know, I just want to say that someone in the chat room made a comment about technology bringing more people together more frequently, but it's what we do with it afterwards that can make a great difference.
Yeah.
Good point. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Got us?
We're here.
Hello?
Okay. I just wanted to make that comment from someone in the chat room. And they also wanted to know if there was a visual. They were wishing they had a visual with what we were speaking about.
Good point also.
Picture page.
Well, now, let me ask you a question, Fred or Lee. Someone who wants a visual to be able to help better explain something to them, does that fit into any of the four ways?
Well, any of the four ways can be visual learners. And so that's kind of another overlay. And some of us prefer to learn visually, some of us auditorily, some of us kinesthetically. And it's not hooked into any one of these four personality types. It's relevant to all of them.
Mm. Okay. All right. So And with regard to that, there isn't any one of us that are strictly one or the other of those things. Don't we all feel that on varying degrees as well? And
yes.
Then it's just a matter of where we're more effective?
Yes. I tend to be, for example, a visual learner, so I like to see it so I can understand what your colleague is asking for because I need to see it. Once I see it, then I go with it. Other people learn more auditorily, but I learn to some degree that way as well, of course. We all do. Yeah.
Mm. You know, this
well, the
is
same
been
with the four spectrum, the four ways, which Lee mentioned earlier, and you alluded to as well. One person, each individual may very well turn out to be more action-oriented, an individual, more action-oriented, more logical, or more relationship-oriented.
Right.
But there's I don't know of any human beings I've ever come in contact with that wouldn't have some characteristics of each of the other areas. And with my own case, I was equal in two. I was completely equal in two. The highest category, I was two of those four categories for me.
We've never had anyone who did not have some representation of each of the ways in their profile. It may be relatively low representation, but everybody has some of it. And in life, we have to, at times, use organization to get done what we need to get done, or we need to use some logic, or we need to be able to relate more effectively, or we need to take action. So ideally, we can all, at times when required to, draw on any one of those.
Mm. You know, I found it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I, as a logical person, would like to, just for just a moment, respond out of my relationship way and show that I can be a little bit flexible. And what I'd like to do is respond to the person who's looking for a visual. Can that person get back in touch with you and specifically what they're looking for? Because I'd like to respond to that and get him or her whatever they're looking for.
Actually, they asked if there was a chart that could be displayed in the chat room. And I told them that I could actually, not really, but in the workshop, it's all right in front of you. It's what's going on in front of you. But if you have something other to offer than that.
Well, I think you could offer them, Susie, a website, the Personality Resources website, so that person could communicate. I'm sure that Fred and Lee, that you have a contact us element
on
your website. That person could probably contact you that way.
Right, or either one of us can easily be contacted at our email addresses, which are really quite simple.
Okay.
We're happy to get back with any responses that we can. I'm just Lee, L-E-E, at personalityresources.com, and Fred is Fred, F-R-E-D, at personalityresources.com. And either
good.
One of us would be more than happy to respond directly
wonderful.
On that one.
Okay, good. I'm typing them out in the chat room now so that people
okay.
can visit. And once again,
so,
listeners, if you...
We do have this visual... We do what we call organizational mapping. So if you have an org chart for your organization, the people have taken the assessment, we can put their profiles on so you have a good understanding of all the people in the organization and what their profiles are for relating and communicating.
Okay. Now, what about for individuals in family situations or in relationship information? And all they have is son, daughter, father, mother.
Well, that's okay, but that's an org chart also. And we have little
okay.
sheets in our participant books where you put the family profiles on there. And so you can begin to understand some of the dynamics in the family. For example, two organized parents with an action child feel they failed because the child never quite gets that highly organized.
Right.
And two action parents with an organized child, the child is trying to supervise and direct the parents because they feel the parents are not following the pattern.
I have a daughter like that.
Okay.
She's constantly telling me, Mom, why is everything upside down?
That's right. But she's exerting her organized needs by saying, I need structure in my life, and if I can just get my mother onto this pattern, that'll be a big help.
Right, and then we do, though. We do try to convert others, though. Isn't that amazing? Even though that we know that we're individual and we have these differences and we can appreciate and respect them, we always come to some point of frustration going, why can't they just figure this out with me? Or, you know, why don't they understand? So, and I really love this. I do have one question, though, that I find really interesting, and I don't even know if this is anything that the workshops or maybe you've had in the past or would even think about in the future, but has there been any way that you can measure which of these four ways or each one of these elements are attract other elements?
You mean in terms of relationships?
Yeah.
Well,
you know, like if...
I maintain that personal relationships, we're often attracted to people who are least like us because they're kind of mysterious and exciting. And so we might find that. If you are attracted to someone who is very much like you, you'll find a comfort zone. In a large auditorium, if you walk in and you don't know anyone at all and you look around to see who you want to sit next to, chances are you're going to sit next to someone who has a personality like yours, and you do it fairly unconsciously because you sort of feel that person looks like or acts like you do, therefore I think I'll be comfortable in that chair.
Law of attraction.
Sitting next to that person.
Yeah, that is law of attraction. And I, that's why I find it amazing, because for so long, you know, the cliche has been, you know, opposites attract. And when I've found out that that's really absolutely not true. Even what we're looking in those other people are things that we're attracted, that we want to be like, that we want to emulate, that we want to have possibly ownership of that in our own lives if we realize that we don't have it. So it's really that, you know, birds of a feather flock together type of thing.
Well,
but I was just curious about the four ways, whether, you know, I find it interesting that Craig and I, our first way and our second way are reversed, even though his is equal, but the last two are the last two for us.
Okay. Well, my wife is very highly organized, and my weakest area, least developed, is organized. So she kind of balances me. Now, it doesn't mean it's always easy in that kind of relationship, because she's trying to provide structure, which I don't want. I'm much more action-oriented. And she's always saying, my gosh, can't you remember anything? Well, she remembers everything. And I don't remember. If I'm going to the store and need four things, I better write them down, or otherwise I won't come back with the right four things. I'll bring four things, but it's something I just picked off the shelf, so I at least get back with four items.
Wow.
So anyway, but the fact in our relationship, she brings some structure to the home and to what we have to accomplish and so forth. That's a valuable contribution to me, because I don't provide that element to the degree that she can. But when you have these differences, it doesn't make it easy always, because in her attempt to meet her needs, that may conflict with how I'm trying to get my needs met.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when we traveled historically, how I want to travel, I want to get in the car, just go down the road and just take off and go. She wants to know, where are we going to be tonight? What clothes should I bring? She wants all this planned in advance. To me, the vacation is this free spirit, go and do whatever you want while you're out on the road.
I'm sorry I'm laughing, Fred, but I've gone through this
sometimes
all the time.
Sometimes it's not just openness and receptivity, it's tolerance.
Tolerance,
has
yes.
to learn.
You have to learn tolerance. If you're going to marry your opposite, you better learn some tolerance.
But isn't that funny, because I think that's what brings the complementary aspect into relationship, is there has to be the understanding and the respect in order for that to work.
Mm-hmm.
That mutual, you know, respect. And, you know, I had to laugh because I'm just like you, Fred. I really don't plan in advance, but they're a part of my second way, which is action, to where I know that I have to come together and make this work.
Yeah.
You know, and I need to take action on it. I can't be sitting there just thinking about it all the time. But I do crave those experiences.
Right. Well, we're propelled. But you see, how we would get things done as action people is different than how the organized people would get them done.
Mm-hmm.
The processes are different. So my
the
wife
timing
has all this
tends
structure
to be
and
different.
Plan. Excuse me.
What then? Is?
The timing tends to be different with the action people and the organized people.
I agree with that.
The organized people will start immediately on a task. My husband will be packed for a trip 2 weeks before we leave. I pack sometimes in the car going to the airport. I take all the things I think I might need, and I pick what I'm going to put in the suitcase sitting in the back seat of the car driving to the airport. I don't see any reason to do it any other way. So I think when you're – and action is my second. I think that action people – frequently thrive on doing things at the last minute under pressure. I work extremely well under pressure. That's
wow.
Not quite the case for an organized person.
You know, it's funny. We had just had a couple of questions in the chat room. Actually, a statement to which I thought was rather funny was Jean in the chat room was saying, that's her. She sees the whole, but her home looks like managed chaos. To her. Managed chaos, yeah. And then there was someone else who asked, you know, is it general for men to need to be more structured? And we didn't go into the gender thing because I don't think it's preference. I mean, my immediate response to that was, no, I found a lot of men in the relationship way as their true core.
Right. And, on the gender thing, there's an equal number of men and women that need organization in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's an equal number that need organization. And the action way, there's an equal number of men and women who want to act spontaneously right now, do it, run off, and so forth. In the relationship way, there are more women than men in the world. There's two-thirds of that group are women, only one-third are men. And in the logical way, two-thirds of that group are men, only one-third are women.
So, Lee, does that make you, that makes you rare?
That's right. I'm an important commodity, yes.
The both of you, which is why you work together so well.
That's right. We can complement each other. Lee's an important commodity, being a logical woman, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? I felt a lot of relationship coming from Lee this evening. I did.
Yeah, yes. She doesn't always admit it, but it's there. So.
It's Fred's influence because he's an equally precious, valuable, and unusual commodity because he's a relationship man.
Yes. Yes, and I love this whole dynamic. I really do. But again, for our listeners, we've been listening to Dr. Fred Liefgren and Lee Wagman of Personality Resources International. And again, you can reach out to either Lee or Fred at www.personalityresources.com. I just want to get that in there before we have to depart. And this is great. We've had some great interaction in the chat room. You know, I always welcome people to call in if they have questions. A lot of them like to sit and chat amongst themselves, and then the questions pop up, you know, as we go along. So either way is fine. And
they can direct those questions at us through the Internet, so that'd be fine. Email us.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a seemingly mindless question for you, but it's a point of curiosity for me. Is it the relationship type or the action type that has the greater propensity to be late almost all the time?
Action.
To not be on time.
Action.
Or is it?
Well,
can you not differentiate?
It can
we've seen an organized
certainly not the organized one.
No, the organized people are punctual. But
yes.
Here's why relationship people are late. Because they engage in conversations or are helping or rescuing somebody, and they don't feel
right.
They can leave that situation until it's all resolved. And
right.
So they're late getting to the thing they were scheduled to be at.
Yeah, we tend to
the greater
ourselves
would be for relationship people.
And the action people aren't too concerned whether they're late or not.
Yeah, okay. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not.
Yeah, it's irrelevant. It's not a big deal.
That is so interesting, though, to look at these dynamics. I know Craig and I are going to have a conversation after this call.
Another
and
one,
yes. Yeah, right? I love them. See, I'm doing the conversation thing. And I think, Fred, in that relationship aspect, is there really a way in any of these cores to really overextend and overdo what our core is, or is it just fine the way it is?
Well, for relationship people, they're fairly vulnerable because they always say yes and they want to accommodate. So they can get overextended by committing to too much. And so they will have to, you know, for themselves draw a line and say, this is all I can do. And that's very hard for relationship people to do. Organized people are much more effective at drawing a line because they know exactly how much they can do and they know exactly how much time all the commitments they have made will take them to accomplish it. They have that great capacity to have that all figured out. And relationship people can think, oh, well, I'll just say yes, yes, and somehow I'll get it all done because they just want to make it all happen, make everybody happy.
Okay, well, we have someone in the chat room that just gave an example. I get everything done under pressure. If I have a date and a time it has to be done, it will be done. But if I have a year or so to get it done, it might not be until the day before it's due that I get it done. So where did we...
That's an action person.
That's an action person. Okay. Yeah. Okay, good.
And I
that's
say
great.
Right on. Why do it in advance if you can do it at the last minute?
Well, you know, my mother... It's funny, someone just said in the chat room, too, that her husband and I have both told each other that they would be late for their own funerals. And he was a year late as his body went to medical research and was not there for the service. but that is so true. My mother used to say that to me. She goes, you'll be late for your own funeral, you know, and
yeah.
I guess that's my relationship trait. I'm so busy all the time.
Because you're socializing, you're taking care of people, and you're wanting to make sure everything is fine before you leave, and so you kind of forget what the time or the commitment was you had in advance of.
Yeah, but we do observe some stress with that when we know that that's the case, don't we?
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, you see,
but that's partly out of consideration because you don't like to keep someone else waiting.
Yeah,
that's
you feel guilty. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, this has been a real treat, and I'm so glad that you were both able to join us on such short notice, and I'm really looking forward to the next workshop. Because even though I already know who I am, I want to be there and I want to meet more people.
You'll learn more about who you are and who these others are as well.
Yeah, it would be really interesting. And I invite everyone again to visit the website. And if you have any questions, Lee or Fred will be happy to answer them for you. Just email them at Lee, L-E-E, at personalityresources.com or Fred, F-R-E-D, at personalityresources.com. And thank you again, both of you. We only have about 3 minutes left, so I'd like to reach out and just ask you if there's anything last minute that you'd like to share.
Well,
we're both being relationship. We're being very, very polite. I just want to thank you for the opportunity and to tell you how much I've enjoyed this. This has been fun.
Good, and we do this every day, right?
Yes, this has been a lot of fun. And we just hope that some of your listeners have got a new kind of insight into human dynamics and human behavior, and that they'll be curious and they'll want to follow up and see how this can, you know, add to their life and well-being for themselves, for their family, for their community, for their workplace, because all of this is very, very relevant. It just makes life better. It makes things work better. People are happier and getting greater satisfaction and fulfillment and success.
Yeah, and I think it brings validation to each one of our own contributions and, you know, that we feel good about ourselves in any of these environments, you know, by knowing ourselves better. I mean, I know that's always been my mission in life is to get to know me better than anybody.
all of us relationship people buy all the self-help books.
Yeah.
Go to all the workshops and all that. Cause
isn't that funny how we want to read about what we already know?
Yeah, we want more validation. We can never get enough.
All right. Well, thank you so much again, Lee and Fred, for joining us. This has really been a great show. And thank you for being part of our Conscious Business Productivity Series, because this really is about human consciousness and connecting on conscious levels. So, again, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope to see you soon.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. Okay. All right. Talk to you soon, everyone.
Right.
Thank you for joining us this evening. And remember, with the holidays coming, we'll see you after Christmas. And find the joy in enjoying your journey. Take care now, everyone. Bye-bye. Lee, Fred, you still there?